AP Radio News. Good morning, I'm Ed Donahue. Midnight tomorrow is the deadline, and it looks like a budget bill could go down to the wire. House Republicans are still asking for concessions as part of a bill to keep the government operating. Here's the AP's Jerry Podlander.
The first government shutdown in 17 years looms larger after the House approved a bill that provides the money to keep the government going until December and includes a one-year delay in the health care law. The White House has issued a veto threat, and ahead of the vote, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid called the measure pointless, reiterating the Senate would reject any effort to make any changes in the health care law.
This New Yorker can't understand why lawmakers just can't get along.
I don't have a really high regard for the government right now. I just know that I don't get paid unless I do my job, so they still get paid, and they're not doing their jobs.
A new report says poor communications between the men and support staff was a factor in the deaths of 19 firefighters in Arizona.
Jim Carl says there were issues in programming radios for the fire crews on the morning they died.
A tone guard was left out, which at times, in depending on the frequency or movement, it may not allow or allow the communicator to be able to communicate together.
That apparently left a half-hour communications blackout with the Granite Mountain hotshots. Ironically, as a 70-foot-high wall of flame overcame the men, a large aerial tanker loaded with fire retardant was circling overhead, waiting for word from the ground on where the hotshots were located. I'm Ross Simpson.
The father of a Los Angeles Dodgers fan stabbed to death following a Giants game in San Francisco is planning to make a public plea for witnesses today after San Francisco's DA said he lacks evidence to charge a suspect who has been released. It's early in the college football season, but Lane Kiffin is out as coach at USC. The Trojans lost to Arizona State 62-41. This is AP Radio News. A cargo ship carrying a half ton of meals and other items has arrived at the International Space Station. The AP's Marcia Dunn reports the delivery was from a private company, Orbital Sciences.
The delivery should have come a week earlier, last Sunday, but a discrepancy in some navigation data between the space station and the new Cygnus capsule forced a delay. So here we are 1 week later, and all is well.
The Olympic flame has been lit in Greece. It has started a journey to Sochi, Russia, in February. Thomas Bach is the International Olympic Committee chair.
The Olympic flame thus reminds us to be aware of our own Olympic limits. But it reminds us also to use the strength of our values and symbols for the positive development of global human society.
The torch relay will cover more than 40,000 miles. I'm Ed Donahue, AP Radio News.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Have you ever wanted to be a paramedic, firefighter, or EMT? Now you can. Join the Bethesda Chevy Chase Rescue Squad. The squad responds to over 10,000 emergency, medical, and fire rescue calls each year, and most members are volunteers. When they aren't saving lives, most work or attend school full-time. No experience is needed. You'll receive top-notch, life-saving training free of charge. Apply online today at bccrs.org or call 301-657-5557.
Hi, this is Hillary Howard. Join me October 12th and 13th for the Law Enforcement Ride and Run to Remember. This year, we have 55 or 30-mile bike rides held at National Harbor Saturday, October 12th, and a 5K in Washington at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Sunday, October 13th. The Law Enforcement Ride and Run to Remember raises funds and awareness while commemorating the service and sacrifice of law enforcement officers. Go to rideandruntoremember.org to register today.
We're all different, but if we all stand up as one, no one stands alone.
Won't you stand up, stand up, stand up?
One by one, we can change the world. It's up to you and me. On Monday, October 7th, let's all wear our blue shirts for World Day of Bullying Prevention.
Won't you stand up and use your voice?
Get your blue shirt at stompoutbullying.org.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Colin Callahan, and today's show is brought to you by the Potomac Companies, helping companies control the future cost of healthcare. We have a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Mike Brown, the CEO of Olympus Auto Parts, Phil Harvey, the president and founder of DKT International, Bob London, the founder and president of London Inc., LLC, and Rob Ord, the founder and CEO of Falcon Industries. First up is a young man by the name of Mike Brown, who's the CEO of Olympus Auto Parts. What is Olympus Auto Parts, Mike?
We are the purveyor of the finest automotive parts in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area.
You're the purveyor. That sounds exotic.
We're a warehouse distributor. Our customers, about 2,500 local repair facilities, tire dealers.
So you supply parts to all the guys that fix cars.
If you're driving an import car in the Northern Virginia area, you probably have my parts on your car.
No kidding. When was the company founded?
1977, and I went to work for the company in 78.
And you are the CEO, so at some point you bought it?
Yes, I did. I was hired as a salesman. A very small company at the time. I believe there were six people working for the company. And I was working for a larger importer, same owner, who opened up this retail outlet, auto parts store. And he asked me one day if I'd want to try my hand at selling. So I went over to the then Olympic Imported Parts.
How old were you when you got that job?
20 years old.
20 years old. First time selling anything in your life?
Yeah.
Were you good at it?
Actually, not bad. Not bad.
What made you good at it?
I grew up going to Catholic school, and they forced us every Christmas to sell these hideous Christmas cards. And I was able to do quite well doing
those
that.
Those were the UNICEF cards, if I recall, right?
It was, I remember what they look like now. And, it, you know, great message, but the cards were not all they should have been.
Was it something about cars that attracted you, or you just managed to find a job with this place?
No, I managed to find a job. I come from a large family of five brothers and sisters and a military family, and basically, if we wanted something, we had to earn money and in order to get it.
How young were you when you started working?
Probably 8 or 9 years old.
Mm-hmm. And what were you doing then?
Raking the neighbor's yard, cutting grass.
Was that your idea?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What'd you do with the money?
It didn't go very far because there wasn't that much of it. Comic books was big.
Mm-hmm. What do you remember most about your childhood that has kind of shaped who you are today?
You know, probably the adventure of it. We grew up in a suburb of Charleston, South Carolina, mm-hmm. and it was in a brand new development. And we were one of the first families to move in there. A lot of woods. We had two sets of railroad tracks behind us. And every day was an adventure, either wandering down the tracks and dodging the trains or going through the woods and looking for snakes and stuff like that. And very interesting way to grow up.
So is that the way you run a business, as an adventure?
That's how I look at it every day, because with my company, showing up, there's something new every day. I can have my day fully planned out and get into work and go a completely different route. That's the nature of it.
So you started back in the mid-70s. Did you go take a break, go off to college? What?
I actually started. I worked the summers while going to school with this auto parts company. They were a major importer of European car parts. Mm-hmm. And after 2 years of college, I decided the Navy wasn't in my future. I wasn't ready to sign up for 6 years. So after 2 years at the University of South Carolina, I came back and got a job for a living.
And I understand from the green room that your father was a Navy man.
Yes.
So
yes.
He must have been thrilled.
He wasn't really happy about me leaving, but he wasn't ready to fund it. If I was going to stay there, I would have to fund it myself. So he didn't steer me in one direction or another. Yeah. But what he did demand was that I do something.
Yeah.
You know.
And so you decided to come back and re-go back into the auto parts business.
Yeah. I had worked summers and over Christmas vacation.
How many years later did you buy it?
I was at Olympus in 1977, and I purchased it from the absentee owner 9 years later, 1986.
Why did you want to do it?
By then, I decided I figured out I was pretty good at it. It was fun. We spent quite a lot of time at work, literally 14 to 16-hour days back then. It was a skeletal team. It was a growing business. It took a lot of time. And me and the guys that I was working the company with back then, we're having a pretty good time doing it. And it was exciting. It was growing, new opportunities, learn new things. We got to know the customers well.
So it seemed like a natural progression to go ahead and buy it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds like you were running it anyway.
Well, the owner would come by every couple months and pick up a check. And, you know, 1 month he came by and he said, "Carl, you're either flying your airplane or sailing your boat on the Chesapeake Bay. You don't need this thing. Why don't you sell it to me?"
So you get the keys to the kingdom.
So,
and what's the next day like for you?
The next day is invigorating and as exciting as I could remember. Biggest reason was because our debt service matched our revenues. There was not one dime of error. I had to grow this company.
So how did you go about doing that?
You know, the day before I purchased it,
yeah.
And then the day after settlement, the feeling inside is completely different.
Yeah,
I changed completely. My ability to work, my willingness to work, my willingness to do anything that needed to be done and whatever it took, was magnified, by many factors, and. I guess a fear was a good component of it because I didn't want it to fail. I had a big opportunity, and I was excited about it. And I decided I may not be successful in it, but nobody was going to outwork me. And that's what we did.
Mm-hmm. It's not just the level of effort, which you clearly are willing to put in. What else does it take to be successful looking back on it?
I think you're probably the most important thing, and to this day, too. It's, I think, a trait that I was blessed with early on is an ability to surround myself with really good people. Mm-hmm. So the guys, even back in the early days, the guys that came and worked for me, they were really good guys, and they cared, too, and they were honest and were people of integrity and willing to work, and also guys that we can have fun doing it, which is, as long as we worked, it was really important. Mm-hmm.
What do you take from your mother that shows up in your business style today?
Thank you, Mom. an empathy, a compassion for employees. I see a lot of businesses out there, and I see some employers that treat their employees less than what I think they should. Mm-hmm. I never get the idea that you're mean and very rigid to your employees, but at the same time you tell them to treat the customers like gold. Mm-hmm. That never made sense to me.
Yeah.
So I think from the very early on, I was as generous as I can be with my employees and built the loyalty that came from that. And And I couldn't do it without the 145 people I have working with me today.
What's the most significant challenge facing you as the owner of the business for the next 5 years?
The most significant challenge?
What keeps you up at night, if anything?
The country's economy. The fact that this country hasn't grown in basically, it's been growing 1% in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. I'm a patriot. You know, I love this country. I think this country is afforded me a lifestyle that I really didn't dream of growing up. And I see a lot of things are different today than the way this was when I was growing up. And I'm doing what I can to turn that around.
How about your, across the years, the proudest moment up till now?
The proudest moment. The best thing that I think I've done over the 36 years I've been with this company is to grow it and hire more people and have my employees start as single people, get married, have kids, buy their house, you know, really succeed and you know, really become productive. And, you know, not just me, I mean, I've been blessed beyond any reasonable measure with my business, but to see the others around me and to feel like I had a piece in their families growing and succeeding in society is a real big deal to me.
That's great, Mike. What's the website address?
www.4parts.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Mike Brown, who's the CEO of Olympus Auto Parts. I'd like to thank Colin Callahan, my co-host. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Dave Paree, BusinessWise CPA. Dave, what is BusinessWise CPA?
BusinessWise CPA is an outsourced financial accounting and management consulting firm. We act as trusted advisors to our clients and replace their in-house CFOs or provide them additional expertise during their growth or exit or any other challenges that a company is undergoing.
And what makes your organization special?
Our organization truly becomes our clients' partners. We don't charge clients on an hourly basis. We provide them a fixed fee engagement, and essentially we act as a part of their team, being there for them whenever they need us and delivering results.
And what do clients appreciate about BusinessWise CPA?
They appreciate the fact that we're results-oriented and that we're always there for them. I can't stress enough the importance of being there for them when they need us.
So what is your perfect client need?
A perfect client need is a transition, whether it be growth, whether it be them wanting to diversify or get acquired or acquire another firm.
What do you enjoy most about your work?
What I enjoy is being making a difference, rather, in our client's business, to helping them get from where they are to where they want to be.
What's the website?
The website is www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Colin and Jeff. And this show today is brought to you by Potomac Companies, helping companies control the future cost of their health care. For this segment, we have Phil Harvey, who's the president and founder of a company called DKT International. What is DKT International, Phil?
DKT is a nonprofit that provides contraceptives and family planning services in developing countries. It's a nonprofit that operates very much on a for-profit model structure, in that we provide branded contraceptives, which we sell. We never give them away. And market them much as you would toothpaste or shampoo to get them in tens of thousands of little stores all over the world, including in some of the most in some of the poorest countries of the world.
When was the company founded?
Company was founded in 1989.
And in terms of size, how would you characterize the company?
As a nonprofit, it is fairly large with respect to revenue. Our revenue from sales of contraceptives is about $100 million. Many nonprofits are bigger than we are in total size. That is, when you
right.
take in grants and government contracts and that sort of thing.
So you founded the company.
We're sort
back
of
in
medium-sized on that basis.
Yeah. You founded the company back in 1989?
Yes.
Why start it?
I felt we needed an agency devoted exclusively to the social marketing of contraceptives, there were then, and certainly still are, a number of organizations providing clinic services, which are important and which I admire, but very few taking advantage of the existing commercial infrastructure in various countries, which we have found to be a very cost-effective way to provide family planning.
Why was it important to you?
It was important to me for two reasons. One is I felt that birth control, that family planning, was the most effective way that I could be useful, and indeed that outsiders could be useful in developing countries. And the other is that I felt very, very strongly, and always have, that in providing help, one must avoid at all costs being patronizing or expecting gratitude. There was an incident that occurred early in my career in India when a woman in a flood relief area where I had helped bring in some food ran up to me and knelt down and touched her forehead to my shoes as though I was some kind of god. And it just so unnerved and embarrassed me that I was determined thereafter to provide help in a way that would preferably be anonymous. And that is indeed the way we do it.
Right.
Phil, have you throughout your career always worked in nonprofit businesses?
No, but mostly. I mean, throughout my career, I have been involved with a nonprofit business of one sort or another, mm-hmm. but I've also been in for-profit businesses, which is one of the reasons that we are able to keep the nonprofits going.
How young were you when that sense of service infected you and caused you to move in that direction?
Probably college age, mm-hmm. Perhaps a bit earlier, but it seemed quite natural to me back in the 1960s when saving the world was kind of on everyone's mind, or at least it seems that way in retrospect.
But 90% of the world at that time went and got day jobs. You went and did this. Why?
Because I had a little seed capital. I could afford to do it. I had a partner. This was after I came back from the five-year stint in India. And we were absolutely determined that this way, non-medical, non-doctor way of providing urgently needed family planning services in developing countries would work.
Jeff?
But just because you had the money and the idea, something had to really drive you. What was in your childhood that really kind of pushed you to really take that step?
I don't know. It seemed to me to be a natural evolution, although my willingness to take risks may well have been partly a result of always having been comfortable. By the time I was born, very late in my family's evolution, our family was quite well off. I never felt at risk for being without what I needed to have, and I think that does make you more willing to take risks later in life, which I certainly did, but I believed in it, still do.
So talk about the early days of trying to get this launched, particularly, was every country open-minded to this?
No, but the resistance that we have had from governments in various countries has been, I would say, overall surprisingly small. People have said, well, how can you possibly advertise contraceptives in Islamic countries? But Bangladesh, for example, has been very liberal about contraceptive advertising because they feel very strongly about family planning. Indonesia is fairly liberal on the subject of family planning, and they're of course, are more Muslims in those countries than all of the Middle East put together. So we haven't had a lot of resistance, and when we do, when a contraceptive ad, for example, creates controversy, we don't mind. We welcome the controversy, even if we're taken off the air, which we have been in a number of cases, because then we find ourselves with our ads being reproduced on the evening news, free of charge. And in every case where the controversy has erupted, we've ended up selling more.
Yeah. So you run a pretty sizable organization. How do you spend the bulk of your day now?
Trying to make sure that we have the right people in the right place. I leave our managers alone once they're hired and sent off and paid a good salary with a fair bit of commission built in. I leave them alone. I let each program evolve and develop in its own way. So our programs are very, very different in different countries. But my major role is just getting the right person in the right place.
So, Phil, how do you know when you've got the right person? What are the characteristics you look for?
The numbers are good. I mean, one of the main advantages of this approach is that it's highly measurable. Mm-hmm. If your impact is based on the number of contraceptives you sell, mm-hmm. That's easily measured, and that's the first answer.
If they haven't done it before, if they're coming to you for a job, How do you measure somebody as being somebody that you want to work for you or work in this organization?
Well, now at this point where incomes around the world have been rising and we see opportunities to actually make net revenue in some of these programs, we tend to look for some international commercial marketing experience so that the candidates are familiar with selling fast-moving consumer goods in developing country markets. We also like people who have had some nonprofit experience, some experience dealing with donors, some experience in dealing with the endless bureaucratic demands of government donors, because that sort of patience is required.
Who would you say had the most influence on you growing up?
In terms of, well,
who shaped you as a man you are today?
In some respects, my sisters. In some respects, my father. My father was very adamant about a couple of things, including financial responsibility. He was absolutely abhorred irresponsible financial behavior, including people getting burdened with too many loans.
Yeah. How about your sisters? What influence did they have on you?
Well, my sisters gave me a sense of fun, I think, and left me with an attitude toward wanting to please everyone. As the youngest member of the family, I tried to keep everyone happy. I don't think I was ever threatened with being beaten up, although I did have fights with at least one of my sisters. But I have a tendency to want everybody to leave the room happy, which is why I'm a very poor negotiator.
Okay, Jeff?
Phil, what would you say to a recent college graduate or one who's graduating as to the challenges and benefits of a nonprofit career, particularly internationally?
The challenges certainly won't go away soon, but and the benefits, I think the primary benefits, and we get this coming from the people who apply to work for us, is the opportunity to do something that makes a difference in the world, maybe a small difference, but is a net plus to some of the people who are your clients and customers, and that's very important to a lot of people.
Great. Phil, what's the website address?
DKT, DKTinternational.org.
dktinternational.org. We've been speaking with Phil Harvey, who's the president and founder of DKT International. I'd like to thank Colin and Jeff for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
Are you really confident you've assembled the strongest team to work with you on your business? For example, an attorney who has successfully handled your type of problem, an accountant who sees the big picture, a business advisor who gets it, a real estate broker who really knows the market, a commercial insurance broker who really has access to all the different insurance products, an employee benefits guru who really helps mitigate future costs, a wealth manager who works with you to make work optional, an understandable information technology wizard, a commercial banker with minimal covenants, an investment banker who believes business is a relationship, not a transaction, a staffing specialist who can really help you build the team, even a confidential peer group with whom to compare notes. Listen to executiveleadersradio.com, that's executiveleadersradio.com, to confidently select a business leader who serves business leaders to help you. Because nobody's interviewed more business leaders from Princeton through Northern Virginia than Executive Leaders Radio. So you'll have confidence in your choice of a business leader to help you in your business, in your ultimate selection of this business leader. This business leader can include your attorney, an accountant, a business advisor, a real estate professional, a commercial insurance agent, an employee benefits specialist, a wealth manager, an information technology guru, a commercial banker, an investment banker, a staffing specialist, a collection agency, even a CEO club. Save yourself grief, time, and money. Listen to executiveleadersradio.com. That's executiveleadersradio.com. So you can listen and learn from the most highly respected professionals. executiveleadersradio.com.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jeff Parks and Colin Callahan. Today's show is brought to you by the Potomac Companies, helping companies control the future cost of healthcare. For this segment, we have Bob London, founder and president of a company called London Inc. LLC. What is London Inc., Bob?
London Inc. is a business-to-business marketing consulting firm. So I serve as an outsourced chief marketing officer for businesses that are between a few million and, let's say, $25 million in revenue, that where the management team and the CEO in particular has decided that they're not growing as much as they could be.
An outsourced chief marketing officer.
Yes.
What the heck is that?
That's a good question, and many people ask the question about even just what is marketing. But a chief marketing officer is the person who is sort of controls the rudder of the company from the standpoint of understanding what's going on in the market, what customers are saying, what customers need, and how to serve those needs with products and campaigns and things like that. So the chief marketing officer is the person who is helping enable sales.
So I heard a presentation recently where the presenter was saying that there's been a shift away from sales and more towards marketing. Would you agree with that?
I would say that there is slowly a shift. I mean, there's no shortage of salespeople, as we all know. And I think that over time, what we'll see is that because customers do so much research before they even
right.
pick up the phone to get in touch with a company. In fact, there's studies that say that 75% of the decisions are actually made before the prospect contacts the company because they've been able to do so much research.
So I can imagine that makes your role highly relevant then.
I hope so. Yes, I think that what companies have to realize is that the website in particular is the hub of all this activity. Even if the statistics don't show that there are a million people coming to the site, the people who are coming to the site want information. They're not even looking for a fancy animation on the home screen. They're doing research to make a purchase, and they're trying to get their first impression of you, which is why almost always you'll see the most highly clicked page is the About Us page, because they want to know who's behind this
right.
company.
How'd you get into marketing?
I would like to say that there was a grand design, and I worked hard, and I put my resume together, and I went door to door, and eventually I got hired by my dad's ad agency, and I I have a marketing degree. I can tell you it did not help me get where I am today. Socially, of course, being in college is a great thing. But I think, you know, you look at what is marketing, it's the act of listening. You can't put anything out into the market that's relevant if you're not listening. So I think I became aware that I had certain skills that involved listening, interpretation, perspective, and creativity, and marketing is what it added up to.
So you spent some time in your father's business, right?
Yes, I did.
Was that where the light went off for you, though?
No, not at all. In fact, I left there after about a year and a half and went to work in sales for a company, a giant company that some people don't remember anymore called MCI.
Sure.
Some people don't even know what long distance is, in fact. And so I went into sales because a friend told me it was a fun job. You know, I didn't have all that much direction at that point. And I did it, and I'm glad I did it because it forced me to have to talk to people that I didn't know about something that I thought they should listen to. It was a very good education.
You also said that as a youngster you spent some time in your office with your dad.
I did.
And what experiences did you gain from that?
So I found what was interesting was the creative process of problem solving, mm-hmm. which is what I do now, mm-hmm. and diagnosing a situation, a business problem, and using the tools that a marketer or an advertiser has at their disposal, which in the old days, to the point of your shift, well, let's see, there's about 6 radio stations, 3 TV stations, 2 newspapers in each market, and then you can do direct mail and billboards. And of course, today there are probably 10,000 different ways to do it. So back then it was less measurable, mm-hmm. And I found all that very interesting.
You were how young when you started tagging with them, though?
Oh, I think I started spending time there when I was 10 or 11.
Uh-huh. And then you also told us a story about when helping with an award winning.
Yeah, this was literally around the dinner table. Mm-hmm. He was talking about a challenge that, in this case, it was the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. They were trying to come up with a name for a group that was targeting young adults to get young adults interested in the symphony. And I happened to come up with the name at the table. And then a magazine got a hold of that, and then they put me in the magazine as saying sort of the youngest advertising executive in history kind of thing. I was 13 at the time.
But you didn't start the company right away. You started a little bit later in your career. What was the catalyst to actually take that step?
You know, I was a very, I would say, a successful and financially successful executive with a trajectory that was not happy about it. And so I think at some point, you know, when you come up against a ceiling and you can't figure it out and you start looking at, is this the game I am meant to play? So at some point I saw that I had some skills that could be monetized as a consultant or out on my own. And I quickly found that those were skills that were in demand. And by the way, a lot of it started with just being able to do business writing, which is a... You know, people still complain, this is after, you know, 10, 15 years after I started doing it, that, you know, you can't find people who can put 2 sentences together in a compelling way. So
was that a risky decision for you to go out on your own?
So the answer is not really, because I, at the time, was not married, but I was dating the woman to whom I'm now married. And so I think she took a little sideways glance and said, you want to do what? You want to leave your job with the salary and benefits and stock options and all that to do this? And so I would say in the scheme of things, as with other things, I didn't think it through that much.
I imagine that there are listeners who are in similar position of not quite on a happy trajectory. What can you offer them as a step forward, a catalyst?
So I would say that... I have a lot of really good things to say about that. And I guess this idea that there are going to be millions of people, and I don't mean just in marketing, but even in marketing, they're going to get squeezed out of a cubicle-type job or a mid-manager job because marketing is headed in that direction, where if you're not a specialist and you're not the boss, then you're out. And so I would say that there is a rich, rich community of very successful, independent people who can work as much or as little as they want, in marketing in particular. And I would say that if you have that inkling and you have an opportunity to leave with a little bit of a parachute, you should seriously consider doing that.
What's the single most important ingredient that it takes to be good at your job?
keeping your focus on acquiring and managing a pipeline of prospects.
Okay, that's the business side of the business. What about the art of it?
The art of the business is listening and understanding what people are saying, but most importantly, what they're not saying. And I'm talking about my clients, but I'm also talking about their customers when I interview them as well.
An attitude of curiosity?
I would say curiosity is a key ingredient. Always wanting to be learning.
Has that been your calling card ever since?
It is, and I have it as there's another expression that it was kind of a seminal moment when I was at a deli with my kids listening to another conversation going on at another table, and I later introduced myself to the guy, and he turned out to be an early mentor of mine. And the line is always be eavesdropping, which is another ABE. And I think that there's another way of thinking about it, which is just keep your ears open, keep your pores and your mind open.
Great. Jeff.
You talked about helping clients with their elevator rants. What does that mean?
So I came to learn on my own with my business and then gradually started implementing with clients that the reason so many sales pitches and marketing messages don't ring true or they sound hollow is because they're not relevant. And the reason they're not relevant is because we don't understand what I call the elevator rant or what's the customer complaining about on the elevator when you're not around. And if you don't really know what's going on inside their head, what their agenda looks like for the day, what are the slides in their board presentation that they're about to make, what are their big priorities, spoken or unspoken, if you don't know those things, you're off to a rather rocky start with your marketing approach.
What's the next 5 years look like for you in the business?
You know, that's a really good question, and you hit on it earlier. I've been asked, and the idea has been brought to me to help these legions of people that will be that have already and will continue to be exiting from the corporate world, because apparently there aren't too many consultants who've been succeeding at this level for this many years, almost 12 years. Mm-hmm. So I do have some secrets of success, and there's a strong possibility that I will be bringing that to market to help other people.
How about your what's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished?
The toughest thing I've ever accomplished, are you talking about a singular event or a problem?
The first thing that came to mind.
Oh, the first thing that came to mind was that back to that story at the deli where I was eavesdropping, I figured out who the guy was, I knew he was someone very important that I should talk to, and I proceeded to pay my bill and walk out the door with my kids. And what happened on the sidewalk outside that deli was a moment where I said, my kids happen to have very big brown eyes, and I kind of imagine them looking at me and saying, "Daddy, we're hungry." And so I walked back in, and I introduced myself to the guy, and it turned into not only a great relationship, but about a week later, he referred a very large prospect to me who I closed, and it was one of my, you know, top 10 clients.
What's the website address, Bob?
www.londoninc.com.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Bob London, who's the founder and president of London Inc., LLC. I'd like to thank Jeff Parks and Colin Callahan for co-hosting. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Dana Theus, and this is your Business Spotlight. What's your name?
Heidi Webb.
And what's your company?
My company is Cornerstone Montgomery.
What makes your organization special?
Cornerstone Montgomery is the leading provider, nonprofit provider of mental health services in Montgomery County, Maryland, and we take a multifaceted approach to serving each individual client. We serve about 2,500 people throughout Montgomery County, Maryland. So we don't just look at this client needs medication, we look at they also need therapy. We don't look at that they just need nursing, they need nutritious meals, they don't just need recreational outlets, they need a plan for their life.
So what does your perfect client look like?
Our perfect client is someone who is ready to recover their lives after being diagnosed with a severe mental illness. And I think what makes us unique, Cornerstone Montgomery, is that we look at the person, not the illness. So same with diabetes or heart disease. You don't look at them as the disease. They are not the disease. They're the human being behind it.
Mm-hmm. And then, so what is it that really distinguishes you from your competition?
I think we focus, again, Cornerstone Montgomery focuses on the human. We don't say, hey, you have a mental illness. How do we work around it? We say, okay, we get it. You have a mental illness. What are your plans for your life?
Got it. What do you enjoy about your work?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm not on the front line for this organization, but as the Director of Development and Organizational Advancement, I'm the person fueling the mission. I'm the person going out into the public and discussing what it is we do. So fulfilling is helping all of these people.
And what's the website?
The website is www, of course, Cornerstone, spelled Cornerstone, Montgomery, all spelled out. It's a long one, folks, .org.
Thank you. This is Dana Theus, and this has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jeff Parks and Colin Callahan. And today's show is brought to you by the Potomac Companies, helping companies control the future of their health care costs. Joining us for this segment is a young man by the name of Rob Ord, who's the founder and CEO of a company called Falcon Industries. What is Falcon Industries?
Well, Falcon Industries is a security and investigation firm that I started about 10 years ago out of a little town in Culpeper, Virginia. And we've been in business since 2003, servicing the Maryland, D.C., Virginia areas to both government and private clients. And we have some international security business as well.
How'd you come up with the name?
The name was simple. I wanted to keep it short. And when I went to register my company, I actually couldn't find the right name. So I decided to change the name and add a K to it because there was a lot of Falcon, F-A-L-C-O-N companies out there, and I wanted something a little bit different. And that's what it stemmed from. And it just kind of stuck. Mm-hmm. And now people remember that name with a K in it.
And why start the company, Rob?
I started the company basically because I wanted to do something a little bit different than my career was in law enforcement. I wanted to get more on the private side of things. I was approached by several different private groups and agencies that wanted me to partake in private security. And I started very slow and methodical. And my first contract was indeed in Culpeper. And I maintained that for 5 years. And then from there, I went on to different sites throughout Fairfax, Reston. And we grew and grew and grew. And now we're approaching 200 people on varying days of contracts. Some days it's less, some days it's more. But it depends. It's usually between 100 and 200 employees that we employ.
Yeah. What do you like most about your business and running it?
Well, I love the fact that every day is something new and different. That now that we're getting involved with international security and different threats that are overseas, that's a completely different ball game than what I'm used to. Excuse me, and most people are. So that's broadened our horizons quite a bit. But I like waking up in the morning and hearing different problems that people come to us and we get to solve. A lot of those have to do with government entities, defense contractors, jewelry stores. All those kind of customers really assist in broadening our scope.
So what do you do uniquely well that no one else in the company can match you for?
Well, for me in the company that no one can match is basically I do everything, as I mentioned in our pre-interview. I do a little bit of everything from monitoring the payroll to monitoring the human resources side of things to getting new customers and clients, making sure all our customer service requirements are fulfilled, and trying to look at the large scope of the company and where I would like to drive it in the next 10 years. When I originally started the company, my focus was to start the company, to build it for 10 to 15 years, and then sell it. As many other private security companies out there are rather profitable, and they turn a very good profit when they're sold. But now I have two small boys. One is 4 and one's 8 months. And my focus now is growing something much larger and much more family-oriented towards them.
Right, making a legacy. So You have a background in law enforcement, and yet you're a business owner, and most of what you just described is all the business management piece of it. Where did that come from?
Well, I do have formal education. I have an MBA as well as my undergraduate studies from University of South Carolina, Templeton, and a couple other universities that I studied at. That, to me, really has not applied very much in what I do in my day-to-day business. Everything that I have done and is really through hard knocks and learning. There's a lot of things that our business instructors will teach that I found is not directly applicable to what we're doing in a day-to-day small business. So the things that I do well are, I would say, back to your question, looking at things in a large picture and then directing the assets towards that.
What's the one thing that you can't learn in college that's essential to running a good business?
I think it's experience. You can model it. You can read about it. You can talk about it. But until you actually go through a set of problems that's real, cash dependent, and will directly affect employees' livelihoods and your own, that it's esoteric and it does not necessarily have the gravity as something else that's in real life.
So tell me about one experience that's shaped the way you lead.
Well, from the very beginning, the shape the way I lead is actually when we were started and I started the company, we did not have loans. We did not have cash. I started with less than $600 in the company. So when you gather your first client or you're looking at your contracts and things like that, a lot of people underestimate the cash flow and the payback time of that client to where you will start receiving receivables that will equal what you have out and you've put out for the first 6 months or something like that. So on average for us, it's about 6 months once we receive one client, a new client, to actually get back up to where we were before we started. So that's something that I learned through experience.
I don't think anybody that hasn't sweated payroll quite knows what it feels like. Would you agree?
That's absolutely correct.
Jeff, what's your question?
Rob, you gave us some family history that kind of explained your desire to really be in control, but yet do it in a compassionate way. Mm-hmm. Can you share that?
Well, sure. Again, through hard knocks, I've had a lot of different companies that I worked for, and maybe some of those companies didn't necessarily treat me the way I would like to treat my other employees as well. So I always wanted to treat my employees the way I would want to be treated and have an understanding of what it's like to have and be a in their shoes, because I have been in their shoes. I have worked as security. I have worked as a police officer. All these things are items that I think have helped me be able to direct them as employees and understanding, what it's like to go through the daily grind, 9 to 5, 12 to 12, whatever it would be. And for us, it's a difficult job. It's a difficult thing being in charge and control of personal security.
So, Rob, what were your mom and dad doing when you were growing up?
Well, my mother was working for United Airlines. Mm-hmm. She retired after 35 years. And my father was a senior government contracts lawyer and writer who retired from a couple of different defense contractors. And they were definitely a significant part of my development as being a CEO. Mm-hmm.
So you tell us a story in the green room about something that happened to your mom that really kind of shaped some of your decision-making.
Yes, and I think that it's a travesty. My mom, again, worked for United Airlines 35 years. After she retired back in the early 90s, she found herself in her retirement being pulled from her when United Airlines was indeed bankrupt. And she thought she would be fine. Everything was going to be okay. And what happened to her was everything but about $300 a month was taken from her retirement account. United Airlines reformulated and restructured, took all of her money along with all the other employees' money that were already retired. And that was devastating to her. And for me, it directly reinforced the fact that I needed to do something for myself that could provide, that I could be in control of. And, you know, God bless her heart for all of her hard work. You know, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning from Annapolis, Maryland, driving into Dulles every day for 35 years is something to be, you know, you should wear a badge of honor for that. But, indeed, they did take her money away, I won't fly United.
I can understand why. And because of that event, how do you think that has shaped the way you lead your company? What is it that you want for your employees that your mother couldn't have?
What I'm really looking to do to provide for the employees is to actually, you know, I want to see them successful on several different avenues, and to support them in their educational efforts and move forward. If they would like to have a different job and move forward and have a different career path, we're there to support them with that. And that's vastly different than a lot of our competitors out there that just want to run through employees, and we're not there to have that. That's the difference of having a smaller company that's really been through the whole process and being in a big conglomerate. We're competing with companies that are, you know, 20, 30, 400 times the size of ours. But we're competing competitively with our pricing, and we've been able to provide a much higher quality person and staff to our customers.
What's the website address, Rob?
The website address is www.falken, that's F-A-L-K-E-N, Frank Alpha Lima, Kilo Echo November .us. And we'll look forward to having any visitors there, and they can email us and
great.
Get that down.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Rob Ord, who's the founder and CEO of a company called Falken Industries. I'd like to thank my co-hosts for the day, Jeff Parks and Colin Callahan, for helping me structure the interviews. We've had a great lineup of guests, including Mike Brown, who's the CEO of Olympus Auto Parts, Phil Harvey, the president and founder of DKT International, Bob London, the founder and president of London Inc., and finally Rob Ord, the founder and CEO of Falken Industries. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for without you, we wouldn't have a radio show. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
The World of Montgomery Festival celebrates the rich cultural heritages of our community. Join Fund for Montgomery and Kid Museum on Sunday, October 20th from noon to 5 p.m. at Wheaton Plaza near the Wheaton Metro. Enjoy chef demonstrations and an interactive global kitchen, cultural performances, a craft market, and traditional arts and games. Admission and activities are free to the public. Yes, free. For more information, visit worldofmontgomery.com. That's worldofmontgomery.com.
On Thursday, October 17th, join the Wounded Warrior Project for the Red, White, and Barbecue Charity Golf Event. The funds raised will assist service members who have been injured in the line of duty. All proceeds from the Red, White, and Barbecue Charity Golf Event will be donated to the nonprofit organization Wounded Warrior Project and will support a full range of programs and services for this generation of injured veterans and their families. For more information, visit redwhiteandbarbecue.com. That's redwhiteandbarbecue.com.
Human Service Charities of America thanks all federal employees for their previous support of the combined federal campaign. This year, lend a helping hand to the disabled, hungry, and sick by supporting member charities of Human Service Charities of America, CFC number 10170. Find them at hsca.org or call 800-626-2729. Remember, CFC number 10170. People helping people. Human Service Charities of America and its members exist to improve the quality of life and provide a voice for those disenfranchised by poverty, disability, and age.
Are you interested in obtaining a patent or trademark? The United States Patent and Trademark Office in the District of Columbia Public Library are currently sponsoring a series of free workshops at the MLK Jr. Memorial Library, located at 901 G Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. These free workshops cover a variety of patent and trademark topics. The next workshop will be held Tuesday, October 8th at 6:30 to 8 p.m. Register or call 202-727-1161 or send an email to education@uspto.gov.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. and Federal News Radio.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated.